This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DeFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 43 of the Muscles and Management Podcast. As always, thank you for listening. I just want to double down on that. I always say that, but like, thank you. The growth has just been amazing, and a couple things have happened this week that have kind of just really made me realize the reach the show is getting and the impact that it's having, and that's the most important thing for me with this show, is just being able to impact and help a lot of people and connect a lot of people to a lot of the great coaches and trainers that I've been able to kind of connect with, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, my work, anything like that. It's just been great to kind of have all of that manifest and take place. Funny story, actually, I had a guy reach out to me and ask if there was another link available to the show other than iTunes and Spotify. And I don't know if you know this, but for anyone, I have a brief percentage of listeners, a small percentage of listeners that do not listen to the show on iTunes or Spotify. And I put the links for the host site on my website. And sometimes just in the chaos of my weeks and, all the other stuff that I'm doing, I sometimes neglect that, but I don't really worry about it too much because I don't think, or I didn't think that I got any kind of listeners really that use those links from my site. So sometimes I might post a couple of them, at the same time from, reach and get back to the other weeks that I didn't put up and kind of do it a few weeks later. But I had someone reach out to me, basically saying, are you going to be posting the link soon? Because I'm trying to listen to the show. And that just kind of hit me, 'cause I was like, wow, like people, are actually like kind of reaching out to me to, make sure that they have a way to reach the show and be able to listen. And, that I obviously went up and I put it up right away. And then I also sent them the link personally, but stuff like that is really cool. And then I had another, young gentleman reach out to me, from the United Kingdom. And we kind of, he made me aware that through his master's program, he would be, coming to North Jersey, Montclair State, for part of his program, and asked if we could link up. And I'm obviously going to do that, because I think that's all what this is all about. So stuff like that has just been amazing. So thank you. As always, please share, subscribe, and leave a review. Only two away from 80 ratings on iTunes. I really want to get to 100. That's a huge goal of mine. So please help with that if you can. We get a couple a week. It really kind of puts a drop in the bucket and pushes us closer to that goal. So thank you in advance for those. Take a second to kind of talk about the last two episodes, huge episodes, up there with some of the most downloaded ones I've had, and I've been kind of setting records in terms of the pace of the downloads on the shows. Zach Dakin from TCU, just a lot of great feedback on that show, man, like people tweeting about it and kind of messaging me about it and all that kind of stuff. So he's amazing. It's just a really great episode, so check that out. And then obviously this past week, Alan Bishop, director of sports performance for, Houston's men's basketball program, which has just become a tremendous program. They reached Elite Eight, I want to say, last year, and he's just amazing as well. And both those episodes are with two top-notch guys in the industry, and we talked about a lot of important topics. So, thrilled with those. So check those out if you haven't, for sure. I highly recommend them. I've gotten a lot of good feedback, and both are, on pace to probably break my downloads record. So check that out for sure. So I want to take a second to just give a little background on today's guest, Joe Arattari. Joe is the strength and conditioning coach, of Next Level Strength and Conditioning in Rochester, New York. He's currently one of the coaches and managers there, and he's also the head coach at Penfield High School in New York as well. In addition to that, he does some part-time work with local college programs, soccer, I believe, and hockey. And he's also the New York State Director of High School Strength and Conditioning through the NHSSCA. That is a large acronym that I did not butcher, so I'm happy about that. He was a former college athlete, and is, have been able to gain a lot of insight on, bettering athletes and both a team and group setting, with his experience. So he's a guest that I'm thrilled to have on. His social media presence is fantastic. And he says a lot of good stuff. And he's, like me, a young coach in the industry who's not afraid to kind of sound off on, what he's passionate about in the industry and with training, hence the name of the episode, Sounding Off. We're going to be doing some unique stuff with the structure of this episode. And to finish up on Joe, he primarily focuses on hockey, soccer, and lacrosse. And quick little private life background on Joe. Outside of training, he loves to read and play with his puppy, Tucker. I asked him if we can get Tucker on air. I don't think we're going to be able to make that work, but shout out Tucker. Love dogs. And also, for those of you who don't know, Joe is a proud Italian, much like your guy, Jerry, right here. I just spoke to myself in the third person. So if you want to turn the episode off now, I would completely understand. But Joe, you know, just a guy that I have a lot in common with. So I've been just thrilled to kind of get him on. We both had the idea kind of like, you know, manifested in kind of just us going back and forth and what we wanted to talk about on the show. And basically the structure of this episode is going to be pretty unique and taking a step away from that standard episode structure that I usually run with. You know, since we're very similar in our personalities and have no issue tweeting about controversial and important topics, you know, this is obviously a big reason why we connected first and a big reason why we chose the format we, you know, eventually decided to run with. So we both wanted to run through some of our most impactful and insightful tweets and expand on them. Some of them we have set aside already, but a good amount of them are going to be us just kind of going through each other's Twitter as we go through the episode. Should be really fun. Basically going to pose the tweet. So I'm going to take one of his tweets, read it to him. He'll take one of mine, read it to me, vice versa. We'll alternate. And, you know, we'll expand on them. He'll ask, well, you know, what my thought process was and vice versa. And our hope is that this turns into a very, you know, informational and practical episode for you that answers any questions you have on a wide variety of topics, you know, in strength and conditioning. So thrilled to have Joe on. As always, thank you guys for listening. Mash that subscribe and rating button. Share this. Let me know what you think. As always, I'll talk to you guys next time. Peace. All right, everyone, I'd like to welcome on Joe Arattari. Joe, you know, been, you know, looking to have you on for a while. I really appreciate you coming on, and I'm excited to kind of, you know, for this to be the first episode and, you know, structured the way that we're going to structure it. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Been a fan of the show, so I can't wait to get this one going. I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah, no, for sure. A little kind of a rundown guideline, so to speak, for the listener of what we're going to be doing. So I can't honestly off the top of my head remember exactly how we stumbled upon this. You mentioned something about tweets to me, and then we were kind of saying we're going to do it more of an organic, you know, unscripted episode, which I thought would be really cool. And it kind of had me stumble upon the idea of like us literally just looking through each other's tweets. Now I remember you said to me, we have some viral tweets, each of us. Why don't we look at them and kind of go deeper on them? So then I thought to myself, like, all right, let's make it really unscripted. And we're basically going to kind of filter through each other's Twitters as we go along. I know Joe had a couple he loaded up from the get-go. Just so the listener knows, I'm going totally off the cuff here, so don't hold that against me. We're going to kind of go for tweets that caught our eye. We'll read each other's tweet out and then kind of open up dialogue, you know, to explain it deeper, talk about the subject matter, maybe expand on it a little bit and, you know, give you guys as much info as possible. We're going to alternate. So, you know, he's going to start first with a tweet that he has of mine, kind of read it out. We'll go from there and we'll alternate and do five each. So you're going to get 10 tweets that we're going to expand on. And, you know, I think this is going to kind of be a great way to, you know, give as much info and, you know, practical learning, you know, sources as possible for you guys. So, with that said, Joe, you know, if you have something, you know, ready to go, let's get to it and we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So this one was a couple days ago for you, but there's a tweet about Christian McCaffrey's trainer who said that he really was only doing 5 or 6 hours of training a week. And I saw your tweet, you quoted it, but your tweet was, people think this is abnormal. And then you went on to say, no, it's not. It's just most people think that we have to train with elevation mass and so forth. And then you went on to say, 5 hours is really normal. That's 4 75-minute sessions. So I think, you know, I don't disagree with that. I think it'd be cool to just kind of expand on that. And why is this such, like, why is that news? Like, we train our pro hockey group in the summer and we train an hour and a half, 4 days a week. That's really not that much.
No.
And some days we even tailor back the conditioning and we just do spike ball for the last like 20 minutes because we know they're maybe a little bit fried. And I think people have this, you know, idea that the people have to crush people, and 5 to 6 hours a week is plenty. So I thought it'd be cool if you just kind of expand on that.
Yeah, for sure. So I kind of had a hunch you were going to pick that, and especially because it was recent. And I kind of, to be completely honest with you, and I'm sure you can kind of share the sentiment, like sometimes I don't expect these things to blow up the way they do. And it's just like, what the, you're like, what the fuck? Like, how did that just get 700 likes? Like, I don't understand. I thought it was like pretty like basic what I said, but, I'm going through my feed and I see this and it's like this picture. If the listener hasn't seen it, go back and check it out. The listener, I'm sorry. The tweet said, you know, basically, like you said, he's only training 5 or 6 hours a week. And it's like this very misleading picture trying to paint the idea that he's jacked in the picture. He's got striations on his shoulders. He looks like the friggin' Hulk. You know, how does this guy possibly only train, you know, 5 to 6 hours a week, his trainer just said, and people are like, I don't understand, he's on steroids, the most ridiculous things you could possibly imagine people saying about it, they were saying. So I'm looking at it and I'm like, I can't possibly understand how the hell this is news to like the fact that people actually think that, you know, these people, these guys are superheroes, one, where they need to be training like 47 hours a week and, you know, like you said, crushing each other to be effective for training. And it's like, speaks to this, you know, misconception that just enrages me. And I'm sure it does the same for you, that training to be effective needs to literally beat someone to the point where they can't possibly walk, right? And I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, if you break down that 5 to 6 hours and you divide it, right? So I'm taking my calculator out. I'm doing my, my meathead math and I'm like, huh, that breaks out to like 4 75-minute sessions for 5 to 6 hours, right? And I'm like, this is a really good kind of example to kind of point out to my followers and just people out there. Like, you don't need to be doing 15 hours of training a week to be getting a good training effect. And not even that you don't need to be, you probably shouldn't be, right?
Absolutely not. No.
So that's the biggest thing too. Like, my favorite quote is a Verkhoshansky quote, and it's like, any idiot can make another idiot tired, right? Like, we shouldn't be judging the merits of trainers based on their ability to make an athlete tired, and we shouldn't be judging the merit of a training session based on how tired the athlete is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think like it just paints a negative, you know, image to kids, because, you know, you work with so many high school kids and me as well at the high school level, but our high school split is 4 days a week, and typically the lifts last anywhere from 60 to 90 minutes, which even that's a stretch now with club sports and everything people have going on. Like, a high school kid that's training 4 days a week in the off season consistently is just, it's amazing if they can do it, but it's really rare. Usually we're seeing 2 or 3 days a week for kids in the off season. But those kids are like, hey, should I be doing 4 or 5 and, or 5 or 6? And it's like, hey man, you gotta like chill sometimes. And you gotta understand, like, we always say this at Next Level, but like, you don't grow in the gym, you grow outside the gym. Like, prioritize sleep, prioritize nutrition, and just like be, you know, a human being and relax too. Like, you gotta understand, like, that's how you grow. That's how you get stronger. That's how you get faster, putting things in your body and just getting sleep. But like, obviously not just spinning the wheel. Like, you gotta let your nervous system relax. And you know, we love like a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday split. I think that works really nicely. People have their weekends off, they have their Wednesday off. But yeah, it's just crazy like how, you know, misguided people are. You know, they think that people need to put on hours and hours and hours a day, like these 4-hour marathon workouts. And it's like, if you're just talking about strength and conditioning, like, come on, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and I think you made a great point too. Like, you mentioned an athlete saying, hey, should I be going 4 or 5 or, you know, 5 or 6? It's like, maybe give me 2 or 3 that are really like built, yeah, you know, the way they're supposed to be, and you're actually consistent and you're not, you know, on your phone, you're not doing sprints and kind of, you know, taking a couple breaths and then running your next one thinking it's getting you faster. Like, let's maybe make the training a little more effective and, you know, see if we can get that done in 2 or 3 days to start, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is just a side tangent, but like, whatever, that's the type of episode we're going for. But I just had an athlete today. You just brought up a point. Like, how hard is it doing speed training effectively with kids now? Because they're so, they just can't, they have to be doing something. They can't chill out for a second. I was training, you know, one of my high school guys, and we were just doing some sprints, and I was like, all right, we're just going to get like, you know, a minute of rest. And he's like, no, I want to go. And we're like timing things. I'm like, no, you gotta relax. Like, you just did a 10-yard sprint. We're trying to go for speed. Like, let's chill. Let's talk. What'd you have for breakfast today? That type of thing. And, you know, we're only doing 3 on the day, and he just wants to rifle through them. And, you know, it's just kind of funny to, you bring up that point. Like, hey, let's be effective here. Yeah. Doesn't need to be go, 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 go all times.
No, I mean, and it really, it shouldn't, like I said before, like, you know, even looking beyond things of what they don't have to be, and it's even more of like what they shouldn't be, right? So it's like, you know, not only do you not have to be breathing heavy during a speed workout, you shouldn't be, or else it's not speed.
No, it's conditioning. We know that.
Yeah, but, exactly. And I'm sure we're gonna beat down that path a little bit as we go, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I mean, you know this, but like even having parents watching the facility and they just see a kid do a 10-yard sprint and then he rests for, you know, a minute or two and we're just talking and it's like, oh, what are we doing here? It's like, trust us, like let us do our thing.
Exactly. Kind of, and I get, I talk a lot about training on this show, you know, and with, you know, rightfully so, but, you know, I'm reading this tweet and it kind of just got me a little hot just reading it, to be honest with you. You and we talked about this a little bit on the side, actually, a couple days ago, because I texted you like, where's the comment? I want to respond to this guy. Where is he? and this is, the tweet reads, post a video of a girl increasing her vertical 4 inches from August. And of course, some internet warrior messages. She would have jumped higher if ... It's easy to see who actually works with athletes versus who doesn't. So, first things first that I want to say is I actually talked to Alan Bishop about this a little bit. You know, research, studies versus the anecdotal evidence and maybe a little more of a, relaxed sense in terms of people who work with athletes and people who go on Twitter or Instagram all day and, you know, tweet like they're scientists, but they don't do anything with any actual athletes. So take the floor on that one. Like what was that about? And like, how do you feel about that?
Yeah. And again, like, well, probably intention. It was just one of those things where someone just messaged me about one of my girls who, you know, let me give the reference. She's a junior in college. First time I'm working with this team in college. And I didn't even, you know, I gave them a summer workout program, but I didn't really train them. You know, I wasn't there with them.
Yeah.
These girls are from out of state. So really the only time I have to work with them is in season, 2-3 days a week. And she increases her vertical from August 4 inches, which
is insane. To
do that. And again, it was all her, right? We're not taking credit for that, but
something. No, but yeah, right? I get you.
That's great for her. And the fact that she's a junior, you know how hard it is to increase anything with juniors and seniors. I mean, they're at kind of their high training age. So, you know, she did the work. She did everything. And, you know, I was really proud of that. And then some guy just like makes like a lighthearted comment, but like it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But he's like, if her form was better, she would have jumped higher. So basically she was just maybe looking down at the pad because, you know, the jump pad had the thing was on the ground, the, you know, the scorekeeper, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
It was just one of those things where it's like, A, like you're defeating the point of I'm just being proud of this girl and I'm just highlighting a girl that's increasing her vertical. That's it. I'm not asking for feedback. Obviously there's times where, you know, it's okay to give feedback. But it also was one of those things where like anyone that has worked with athletes know there's that gray matter where, hey, like maybe I can do a vertical jump looking down and I might be better than looking up. Like,
or maybe like there's that's not even the freaking point. Like,
exactly. That's the thing. And, you know, it wasn't a video of like a girl squatting terribly with her knees caving in and too much weight. And like, that should be called out 100%. Like, I think we know that if there's crap training out there and it's dangerous, that needs to be called out because kids see that. And coaches that don't know better, especially sport coaches who, you know, I give them so much credit that they have to run the rule of strength and conditioning. We should call that out. But talking about a girl doing a vertical jump and then some guy that doesn't even, you know, I don't even follow him. I don't even know if he followed me. He just saw it. It was just one of those things where it's like, you don't know that, A, first of all, and B, like, come on, that's not really effective feedback.
Exactly. Like you said, anyone who works with an athlete would never make that, or most of them would never make that comment. And when I say works with them, I mean day in and day out. And like they share their stuff to the world and they're actually applying things with actual people would never comment that. Like I would never say it, one, because I like you and, you know, we're friends in the industry and everything. I would never say that because it's a dick thing to say. But I'm even talking in general, like even if I didn't know you, like I wouldn't comment that. Like it's just, it's unnecessary. And it's and I understand that it could happen with one of my own athletes. Maybe like I post things sometimes for as good of an eye that I have and I miss something. I'm like, shit, I didn't see that little thing was wrong, you know, in the video or whatever, but that wasn't the point of the post.
Exactly. It wasn't asking for feedback. And And I think, and we're not trying to be soft here. Like, we're going to
– no.
The more amount of crap we put out in the field, like, Eric Cressy still gets crap and people still think he's a guru trainer. Like, we know that's not true. But the more stuff you put out, you're going to get taken stuff. But it's the fact that, like, if you don't have a relationship with someone, A, it's uncalled for. But also, like, anyone that works with someone, like, would either DM and be like, hey, like, how
– give that person that respect.
What are you doing to increase verticals 4 inches in season? Not, hey, she could have jumped a little higher if she just looked up instead of looking down. Like, come on, man. Like, be proud of, like, take the positive. Like, because that's really cool. Like, she went up 4 inches in season in the last 2 months. You know, again, anyone that's working with athletes would see that side of it. And a lot of times it's just people that, like, train. I don't even know. They just don't post anything, but all they do is comment on, like, fitness stuff, but they don't post their own comment or own content. So that's the stuff that kind of, like, frustrates us. Because we put skin in the game, and then if you're not doing the same, it's just like, you know, who are you?
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's things I see from people all the time where sometimes I'm like, I don't even want to comment even, like, something remotely, like, disagreeing with somebody, because I don't want to get into it. Like, it's just like, oh, like, it's exhausting.
It's tough too. Like, let's be real. And I think, like, I love Mike Boyle. Like,
I was just about to bring him up.
He does not hold back, and I love it. And he's at that stage in his life where he's earned it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, him interacting with my tweet is, like, a sign of, I take it as respect, first of all, that he would even, like, find it worth it to comment and, you know, following me or whatever it is. Like, that's an honor. But, like, it, sometimes I'm worried, like, oh, like, is Mike going to pick on this? Cause, like, he's tough.
Yeah. And I think, like, too, like, the thing he does really well, cause he does, like, critique a lot of tweets out there, but he also offers the solution too. And it might not be the right solution, but I guess that kind of goes back to it. But, like, if you're going to offer a solution, like, offer the why to, like, why would she jump higher if she was looking up? Like, and I think that's just such a minuscule part of things, because everyone's going to have a little difference. But I think, like, that just goes, like, if you're going to critique something, you better have a why. Don't just make these bland generic statements that aren't supported by anything. And I think Boyle does a great job with that. I know I tweeted something the other day, and I think we were just getting confused over just because Twitter's so hard with, what are we got, 280 characters.
Yeah, it's intention. So what do you actually mean versus what someone perceives that you mean, all that kind of stuff.
But Boyle and I were actually, like, private messaging just, like, to clarify. And
you know, I've done the same with him, yeah.
He misunderstood some stuff, but, like, the suggestions he was giving to me were, like, completely on point, which is cool to see, because if you're going to, you know, have opposing views, like, A, let's do it in a civil way, but also, like, offer solutions, because there's been times where I say something and then someone comments and then now I'm like, actually, maybe you're right. I'm going to change my view because you kind of convinced me, or I see it that way. So, yeah.
For sure. Actually, definitely probably going to ask him to come on at some point. Just a legend in the industry for sure. I guess it's your turn now. I'm on to your second one for me. So let it rip.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is actually still a pretty recent one. But you went on to say one of the biggest fallacies gets promoted in strength training, sport performance.
Ooh, that was just a couple hours ago.
Oh, I know. I'm looking live. Is that you need to be very good or even elite at something to be effective at teaching it. And then you went on to say, I used to bench over 400 pounds. Then my business grew. I had more athletes to care for and didn't have, really just paraphrasing, the time to dedicate to powerlifting and training every day. I spent more time teaching it than doing it. And because of that, guess what? I can't bench 400 pounds anymore, but I'm way better teaching that. Now, I agree completely with that. My question to you is, where does that get taken too far, especially for young coaches coming up that see a lot of these tweets saying you don't have to look the part, be the part, or have a base level of strength to be a good strength coach? Because I think it can be taken too far.
Absolutely. So I will say that what inspired that tweet, and I'm not even going to say who the guy was because there's not many people I'll say this about. He's like a negative person in the baseball industry, and I don't think he deserves to have his name uttered on my podcast. So he tweeted something about, I don't know you as a baseball guy, but you know who Mark Pryor is, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. So I don't know the extent of your interest in baseball and all that kind of stuff, but, Mark Pryor had a lot of arm injuries through his career, unfortunately. And, this guy basically said that you know, his promotion to dealing with pitching. I forgot what organization it was, you know, he better not be touching mechanics and telling people about mechanics, you know, due to his history of injuries. And I'm just sitting there like, my God, like, just because a guy like had some issues with his own mechanics doesn't mean that he can't teach people the right mechanics, right? Like,
absolutely.
So I think that's just a great example in itself to kind of answer your question about what's the, you know, where does a line get drawn in that? Because I'm not necessarily tweeting that to say that, you know, people should be, you know, out of shape, pounding donuts, you know, or, you know, if you're teaching athletes how to sprint, like I've never run a sprint before or whatever. But like I actually had a funny tweet about this like a while back, and my quote was like, you know, I look like a Pepsi machine, but I can teach people how to sprint better than like probably a lot of people that actually ran track. I laughed because I said like all these strength coaches have like their famous quotes, and my luck in 20 years, that'll be my famous quote. But I'm like, yeah, my quote's going to be like, I look like a Pepsi machine, but I can teach people how to sprint.
Oh, that's going on your grave.
Yeah. So I'm thinking to myself, like, while there's a base level, like, okay, for example, I bet you if I had to guess, and even look at a guy like Kyle Bodie from Driveline, like didn't pitch in college, I don't think, barely played in high school, whatever, but he pitched. He got it. Like, he did the movement, right?
Yeah.
He admittedly, he'll probably tell you this, he wasn't the greatest at it, but he did it, right? There's a difference between that and being and then becoming an elite teacher at something and saying that you don't need to be really, really, really elite at it to teach it versus like a person who's literally never picked up a baseball before trying to teach the movement. Those are the two differences for me, and that's how I would explain it, right?
Yeah.
So my aggravation comes with this idea that like me and you as strength and speed coaches, let's talk about speed. It's a really easy way to really, and actually, you know what? Screw it. Let's talk about the bench because I brought it up as an example. Like, we're strength coaches. I am a better coach at the bench press now where like I don't bench very much anymore because I don't have the time to put into these big workouts than I was when I was benching 400 pounds and had two athletes as clients. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's just like so many people too, and especially like when you get into the like celebrity fitness side. So I love like Tony Genicor a while back, like put out tweets like there's a difference between fitness professionals and fitness celebrities, and you know, like the Fitspos and Fit Bros, like, and again, there's obviously great ones out there, but like they post all their workouts and what they do, but they've never trained a person. It's like, well, no crap, you look like that. You're doing it all for yourself, and you've never trained anyone in person. So it's just kind of like funny how people think like you always have to look this certain part. And especially like I look at me too, like being, you know, I'm a 5'6" guy, like I'm built, but I'm not.
Are you really? I would have never, I had no idea.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, exactly. That we're, you know, I don't really post that many pictures of myself.
It's me neither. No one really knows what I look like.
I did get a request to start posting my own lifts just for people to help. So that's one of my goals. It's just, I hate setting up the camera, and when I have athletes, I'd rather have them do it.
For sure. I agree.
But yeah, I know I get, there's that times I definitely know, depending on the team I'm working with, you know, there could be that judgment. And it's fun to actually like break that down and like show these guys who might be bigger than me, like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, coach can still do a little bit, right?
Exactly.
Sounds like I did a lateral jump for a group of baseball guys, and I'm like 280, and it's like watching like a gigantic puma jump. Yeah. I was an explosive athlete. I mean, I'm only 25. I talk like I'm like old and retired, but like when I was playing baseball, like I ran really well for my size and everything. So I did this like really, really, you know, good lateral and landed perfectly. And they're like, holy shit, like, I didn't think you could do that. And I'm like, yeah, well.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, like, I don't know, like your warm-ups, I'm sure you guys do like lateral skips.
Yeah,
Are like the hardest movement for kids to get. They're always going same side. They don't. And I'm like, hey, just skip. And they're like, all right, I get that. And I'm like, no, just do it sideways. And they just can't do that. And it's always funny, like seeing how, you know, they're college athletes or even like some of our professionals and they can't do it. And then they look at us. So I think it's pretty, pretty funny, but I do think it sometimes on the flip side, like, and I don't know how many interns you guys get, but you know, we get a fair amount of interns, and we have a bunch that are almost like too book smart at times. And, you know, our last two classes have been really phenomenal, and we've kind of weeded them out. But I can remember back a couple of years ago, we had people that even if they could teach a lift, they would be so book smart and so keen on like knowing everything in the book. And then it's just like you put them on the floor. So I think it goes both ways with the pendulum, because, you know, I think those people really could benefit from being under the bar more and just having some practical, hey, like grit and knowing like what it feels like to actually put in a really hard workout. We have one or he's actually a coach on staff now. Like, I'm going to give my boy Jake Topple a shout out, and he's definitely someone that I would suggest following on Twitter and Instagram. And he's going to start putting out a lot more content soon, but he's a stud. He really mixes book smart and then practical apply based just knowledge. And he puts out some really good stuff, and he always has great ideas for, you know, being a really young coach in the field. So, it's always funny, like the people that can blend it and kind of have that art of coaching is, you know, it's, you need the soft skills. Like, I feel like it's more about the soft skills when it comes to this stuff sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a blend, really. And that's, you know, ultimately my main message would be it's well-rounded. It's like anything else, anything that's actually good. There is a lot of gray area, and it's not all black and white. You know, and ultimately I see a little bit too much sometimes of people thinking you need to be, the expert at something yourself to be able to, teach it or demonstrate it. And, you know, it's something I want to make sure people know that, you know, that doesn't make them not want to get into the field or, you know, continue to push through the field. So I think that's why that's, you know, the most important to me.
I think almost like the better you are at a sport or skill, you have to be humble to take a step back and realize like what actually goes into that. And using today as an example, I actually met with these two guys who are well known in the soccer field, and I want to get more into like coaching soccer. And obviously I want to do some stuff with performance side of things with soccer, but I'm just talking about straight soccer. And I made the comment like, hey, I played at a high level. I played at a high Division III level, but I wouldn't even know where to start coaching soccer.
Yeah. Just like me with baseball.
Exactly.
I'd be like, what do we got to do? Ground balls? Like, what do we do? Like, I played like, it, but it's like, I don't know how to coach it.
Yeah, like we have the skills available to do that, and anyone can have the skills available if they put in the time to bench X amount of weight. But it's like, wow, actually, like looking back through the process of it and getting someone to buy into it, it's just I wouldn't even know where to start with like putting together a practice plan for soccer. So it's just like being humble in that regard. So
for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So I'm excited about this next one that I found. I think it's a great topic. So, and this has come up a couple different times, and it's just ridiculous to freaking Bleacher Report at it again with their bullshit. God. All right. So
yeah,
I don't even, the soccer player, could you say his name? I don't want to butcher his name. Do you know how to pronounce his name? That was in the tweet recently about comparing his speed to Usain Bolt. Killian, Kylian.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, my God.
I'm not going to even say his last name because I'm going to butcher it, but it's MBAPPE. So basically, the tweet said that he hit Usain, and they actually had the audacity to tag Usain Bolt. Like that, if I were Usain Bolt and that notification came up my phone, like I'm probably going to be going on some rants on my Twitter. He reached Usain Bolt levels of fast. And they even in their tweet, it shows that his peak speed was 38 kilometers an hour and Bolt's average speed was 37.58. So right off the bat, it's like, okay, well, did you not realize that you're saying the guy's peak speed is Bolt's average speed, whatever? And you literally just really simply stated, quoted it and said, no, he did not. Average versus peak. Like, dear God, like what is wrong with people?
I mean, there's really nothing to like crazy to expand on that. Like we don't have to talk about numbers. It's like average versus peak. Like you even said it in the tweet and in the picture. And then like, I forgot like someone else under, I think she was on like the US track team or something, but she was like, you had the audacity to put the soccer player ahead of Usain Bolt in the race. And it's just like the disrespect that it's just unreal that like a blue check verified account that's like, you know, pretty well known in the sport world, I guess, Bleacher Report, even though they post garbage stuff, would like, how does that even go across and like get tweeted out? Like, it just doesn't make sense. I don't know. I really don't know where how else to expand. Like,
well, maybe, I'm going to ask you this. I think it's a good way to expand on it. Let's talk about a little bit, since we're on this topic, how peak or max output increases can improve your, like, your operational output, or, like, you know, your coasting speed, so to speak. Let's talk about that maybe a little bit, kind of maybe pull that out of it to, as a learning point.
Yeah, what do you want to kind of go forward?
So
with that one?
Just kind of talking about, like, in your opinion, and this is something I've kind of talked to a lot about, people understanding that increasing your max output, like the benefit that can provide to you in, like, in-game settings as an athlete.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still kind of confused on what you're asking with that one.
So I'm saying, like, if you, in the ideal training sense, run a 4.44 or a 4.640, right? And you can now rerun it and run a 4.4. Like, the impact that has when you're in a game in pads and maybe you're not at your utmost capacity, or someone's chasing you, or there's these game elements in there. Like, I'm saying the benefit that people need to realize of, like, if you improve your max output and, like, the highest level that you can kind of displace in terms of force and speed or whatever, how that will kind of coincide with bringing up your operational, or, like, your coasting speed or your average speed.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at, like, what we're doing essentially in the gym, we're just trying to, like, reset our residuals, right? So if we can just improve, like, any numbers, like, in the gym, whether it's power output, speed, like, raw strength, like body armor, like that, you know, is going to come into play wherever we are. I don't know if that kind of answers that for you.
Yeah. Quick. Yeah. No. So it's like, and that's, like you said, the residuals are a great point. Like, anything that I can improve in terms of the most that I can put out, if my best improves, my average will probably be higher. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
Bolt's average is this guy's top speed. So if Bolt's top speed went up, like, you know, a kilometer an hour, his average would then be higher than the soccer player, right?
Yeah.
So, like, people realize, like, with training athletes, everyone always wants to be like, oh, condition. But it's like, I can actually even have better conditioning, or, you know, 75% of my best is going to be better if my best is higher.
Yeah. And again, I apologize for, like, misunderstanding.
No, dude, it's fine.
Yeah, no, getting back to that point, like, I just put out, like, a tweet earlier, but it was about the conditioning effect. But I think, like, and I was talking to a girl today, just brand new girl training at our gym. And, you know, we're doing some performance testing. I don't really like doing testing on day one, but again, I have to see where she's at, and got some, like, I do like 3 RMs, and I'm such a big fan of 3 or 5 RMs, because I know, like, if that, you know, is improving, like, we know our max output is going to be improving of our 3 RM of bench, squat, whatever we're doing. So we don't even have to test at that max, and we know whatever, if we're still improving our average, you know, our average 3 reps, average 5 reps, like,
yep,
our max output is improving.
Very much agree. Yeah.
I'm a big like fan of training around that, you know, sometimes even 60, but like that 70 to 90% range. There's definitely times we dip, you know, to 95, and depending on who we're with, maybe above that. But I think that's a big misconception. Like, you can't get better around 70 to 85%. Especially, like, when you look at, like, conjugate, there's times when you're at stupid low percentage. You're, you know, if you're just trying to move, like, things super fast, you know, force equals mass times acceleration, right? Like, let's just move something fast. We don't need to always be, like, at maximal weight, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think a great way to look at it too is, like, you know, max intensity, so to speak, is dictated, you know, in more things than just load, right?
That completely. I don't know if you've ever done these things like stomp jumps, but you're basically like sitting on a bench and you use a little momentum and you push into the ground almost like you're a diver coming off a board, and you basically just do a vertical jump. But instead of just doing a vertical jump, you're using that momentum. And we were doing them earlier with one of our teams, and we just had to like turn off the music and just reel them back in. Like, guys, you understand it's not just like touch the ground and jump. It's push into the ground. It's that.
Yes, intent. that intent dictates the effect, right?
Intent dictates, exactly. And that is such a hard thing to teach. Like, and you know, like teaching in a team setting, speed squats, people aren't rattling the bar at the top. And it's like, that's the intent. We need to hear it.
Yes.
Even if you have a lot of weight on the bar, it's still that intent to move it as fast as you can. And I think, like, I put out a long post, I think like a couple weeks ago. But like, intent is the hardest thing to teach. You know, you can say 80% on the bar, but are kids actually putting 80% on the bar? Are they actually moving it? And then are they actually focusing? And yeah, it's definitely a difficult thing to teach.
For sure. Like 75% on the bar could either be like maintenance weight, or you could be moving it as fast as you can. You could be building, you know, accelerative strength. So that's like, that's the biggest difference.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So I guess, you know, kind of moving things back to you, what do you got for me?
Yeah, I'm actually looking through one of yours right now. I lost it for a second. Oh, here we got it. This one is always just a funny to me.
But oh, God.
Yeah. Well, you know, I definitely have my views on this, and I can't wait to get you going on this. I just can't wait to hear you rant. So basically, the more sport implements, this was done in September,
Jesus.
The more sport implements, balls, bats, sticks, etc., you introduce to strength training, the less specific, quotes, it becomes, and the closer it gets to a circus act with the circus
emoji. Yeah,
transferability of sport, of training, to sport is guided by intensity, planes of motion, load, speed, etc., not sport influence. So I don't know how this still exists.
Me neither. It blows my mind.
Strength coaches can collect money and call themselves a performance coach and do skill work. Like, if you're a skills coach and that's part of what you do and you're doing a part of practice, I have no problem with doing like a lacrosse stick through an agility ladder. Like, not that I would do that, but
no, but at least it's like someone knows lacrosse.
Yeah. With a young team, like, just to have fun, like, for sure, whatever, go for it. But like, with a high school team, I still would even say that's probably not the biggest bang for your buck. But if it's done on the practice field with the sport coach, whatever, go for it. But especially in the private sector, it just blows my mind that there's parents that still think that's quality training. And even if you put that as a part of practice and then maybe you're lifting after, I still think it's just a waste. And I definitely like tell kids like all the time, like, hey, are you trying to play in college? And they'll say yes. And I'm like, if you ever asked your college strength coach, hey, can we bring our hockey stick, baseball bat, or soccer ball to the weight room? You would be laughed at. And they would just look at you with like you had 10 heads. Like, no, for the most part, no college strength coaches are going to be okay with that or do that. So if that's the truth, like, why are kids in like middle school doing that? And, you know, I think it's even worse at the younger ages because it's hard to get them out of that habit. So I just kind of want to hear you talk about that.
Yeah, for sure. So I think the number one reason why this happens is just a misunderstanding. And as you know, right at the end of the tweet, I kind of put the transferability and what it's dictated by. I think, you know, not understanding that is the number one reason why we still have these issues. And what I mean by that is I think people don't know enough of how to make – okay, backing up for 1 second. First and foremost, understanding the idea that like strength training, 85% of it is not going to change from sport to sport, right? Like
100%. Nope.
Right? So get that out of the way right off the bat. Like I think people don't understand that. And then what they don't understand in addition to that is the idea that, you know, they don't know the actual ways to make something geared more towards a sport. So the easiest way to do that is to just bring the implements in. So it's like, you know, people assume, okay, strength training, and I want to make my strength training, you know, more applicable to a sport. What's the easiest way to do that? Oh, well, here's the sport movement. If I make it heavier, then that's strength training. If I take the sport movement and make it moved or make it done really quickly, that's speed training. Or if I take a general strength training exercise or a speed training drill and I put a sport implement into it, like I just concocted like the most genius, you know, way to train athletes that like anyone has ever thought of. Like that's how it's conceived. And I think that's why it becomes an issue. And I think the other problem is, and you mentioned the private sector, is there's such pressure on coaches these days, unfortunately, to outdo other coaches or to, you know, impress parents who are paying them. And if we could educate parents to the degree where they understood these things, they wouldn't seek out these ridiculous training methods and they would just go away.
Yep.
Like, yeah. I think that's like the number one reason why it is what it is, because it's a lack of understanding of what actually is sport specific, not only from the coaches, but from the parents. And then the parents push for this stuff or seek it out. And that's why it still happens, because they're the ones spending the money. And if people feel like people are going to spend money on stuff, they'll still do it.
Yeah. It's hard too, because I mean, you can have a stud athlete that might not do the best training method, and they're probably still going to be a stud. And so I think it's like hard, because like parents should be picking gyms based on like the level of improvement a kid made. So like if a stud made zero improvement in some of their metrics or numbers, then that's not the great place to be, right? Like if you could take a dud to like an average kid, like that's more impressive sometimes. Like taking these kids that aren't athletic at all and then like making them somewhat athletic. And, you know, you might take a kid who might have had no chance of playing high school to maybe a starter. And those are the type of, you know, development models you want to be a part of and gyms you want to be a part of. Because it's really hard to like improve performance metrics if you're just doing, you know, constant. And again, this brings up like another thing, like constant speed and agility. Like I think speed and agility, especially like conditioning, are overdone.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but like, I think like a couple sprints a week, and maybe like we don't even do that much agility. Like I don't really train. I train some reactive agility, and that's maybe about it. But in my off season program, it's maybe once a week, but I'm more concerned on like 5-10 yard sprints. We'll do those a couple times a week, but I just think like agility drills, like a half hour agility drills, is just like, let's get to the meat and potatoes here. I don't know about you, but I just think they're overdone sometimes.
No, I agree. I mean, it's like at the end of the day, what can I do to make my athletes stronger, more resilient, more powerful, you know, and less susceptible to injury? And they're going to do all those hours of practice, and they're going to get better at, you know, reacting to the stimuli of their sport while they're actually doing their sport. And they're going to get better at it and be better, you know, kind of suited to excel because of the strength and the power and the speed that they developed in the general sense, in the general physical preparation, that'll make them better at the sport itself. And that's also, just to kind of finish off this one, remember that, you know, sport specific is literally only the sport itself. So it's no such thing as having sport specific in the gym. It doesn't exist.
It doesn't. And again, like they get so much of those metrics of like what sport specific is in the field. So like we can come up with the best agility drills, but like the best agility drills are just like playing in your sport. You know, especially like everyone just working with a bunch of soccer girls in the off season. And we would do a couple, because let's be real, like some of the drills are fun and they want to do them. And I'm not going to be this old, you know, crumgeon type coach that's not going to let them have fun. But we just literally just did like a couple 10-yard sprints every week. And then we just train and we got better. Like their agilities went up and we didn't really do that much agility, you know? So it's kind of, you know, they do that so much in their sport as is. Especially a sport like soccer where there's really no off season. But yeah, I think that's a good follow up to that tweet, or a good end to that one.
Yeah, for sure. Now this is one, and for the life of me, I can't find the tweet, but I know it existed. And I know enough to, kind of summarize it. And it kind of came up, you know, in our discussion a little bit before. And you mentioned, you know, not doing too much testing on day one. You haven't had an athlete before. And I think a lot of that, especially in the realm of strength training and squatting or whatever, and testing strength numbers day one when you've never seen the athlete squat or do anything like that. You know, and you mentioned in a post previously, like, you know, I think it's ridiculous to, or maybe not ridiculous wasn't your word, I don't want to misquote you, but it's like not the best idea maybe to run a new athlete you've never worked with before through, you know, some testing that, you know, one, the movement can be done wrong. It might not give you an idea. Like if I have an athlete who's never done a jump before, do a vertical on day one, after 2 days of training with them, their number would be 3 inches higher just from learning how to do it.
Oh, it's so much of that. And I think like, that obviously context dependent, like we know as strength coaches, like there's some situations where we have to test depending on like the sport coach and what sport we're with. And sometimes we just truly don't get a say and you just do the best you can. But if you have full autonomy to make those decisions, I've learned to like, it's just not fair to test strength numbers on day one. So much of it, like, again, like a bench press, like, you see it all the time, like kids' feet will flare, a brand new kid. And it's just like, hey, if you just put your foot into the ground and you don't move it, you're probably going to maybe get those 3 reps, or you're going to go up by 5 pounds. You know, jumps, kids are pushing their hands going down in the reverse pattern. It's literally just a lot of technique. So I've been a big fan of too, just like, what do I care the most about? So if I do have to test and I have say, the really, for most of the sports I work with, and just for your listeners, I primarily work with hockey, lacrosse, and soccer, at least like in the private sector. And then I work with 20 plus programs at the high school. My biggest concerns are how high can you jump and how quick can you get in 10 yards? How quick can you sprint 10 yards? That's really all I care about. And I know, you know, just testing my women's hockey team at the college level, I've been with them for a year. This is year two. First year we had to collect some scores and we did some traditional, you know, strength tests, and we still did it this year because we have a very mature group of girls, and anyone who works with hockey players know that they train probably at an earlier age than most sports. I think hockey is so far ahead of a lot of other sports in terms of that. You know that just working with junior hockey guys, they get a lot of good training. But so to speak, like, now I'm at the point where I know which girls are strong enough. I don't want to say they're too strong, 'cause that's not true. But, you know, I have some girls that are ripping 80-pound dumbbells for rear foot elevated. Like, that's pretty strong for a female college hockey player.
Yeah.
Like, how do we get this girl now to express that? And how do we just maybe maintain if we can? Like, to be honest, I don't need them to get any stronger with that. Like, how do we maintain that? And then how do we get faster? So, again, when it comes to the testing part, like, I just want to see, like, our verticals going up, our 10 yards improving. And then for the girls that are strong, like, can we stay around that? And the girls that aren't as strong, you know, some girls maybe are grabbing 40s and only doing 80-pound split squats. We know, like, if they just increase their force production and get stronger, their other performance measures are going to go up. But as far as testing on day one, I just think it's not safe to, you know, have a kid do a back or front squat on day one. It's just asking for an injury. I think if you're going to test some strength or you have to, I think bench is relatively safe, you know, for the most part. And I love chin-ups. They're definitely safer. You're really not going to see that many injuries. But I just think it's crazy. Like, day one, sometimes, like, these coaches have these, like, 1RMs. I personally don't really find value in 1RMs with brand new kids. I just don't know how you can train a kid you've never trained before. I just don't get it. Once you get them in training, you're going to see, if you're doing your job, you're going to 100% see improvement. So then what are you really evaluating in your program? You know?
Yeah. I think that's a great point that actually you kind of mentioned right at the end there. I was thinking it, that I wanted to bring it up, and you kind of hit it right at the end. You know, the testing is a good way, one, for progress for them, but as a coach, it lets you evaluate the effectiveness of your programming. And I mentioned the vertical as an example, but if, you know, an athlete jumps a 17, that's like a 13-year-old athlete jumps a 17 day one, and they had never really jumped before, and I teach them in the next day or two, they could probably jump like a 19 or a 20, like, just from learning the mechanics alone. So why would I want to get a 17 on the first day, you know, and then 6 weeks later I test and it goes up to a 21, well, or a 20, let's just say, well, you know, 2.5 to 3 of those inches that they got might have all just been from learning the mechanics. So what did I really do in terms of my programming, aside from teach the kid how to do, you know, load into a jump, which is important, but, like, I'm not going to measure the validity of, like, the loading I'm doing or the amount of jumps that I'm doing with them based on that result. That result is just based on them learning how to jump.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, like, it's just like, what are you measuring from day one testing a new kid to day two, or excuse me, like, month two? It's just like, I feel as though you need that baseline level of strength through training to actually, like, have something to test. And, you know, doing on day one, and again, like, thinking from, like, a, like, not even a training standpoint, like, a mental standpoint, I just think that's not the best situation to put kids in. You know, football is probably gonna be one of those sports too, like, they're gonna probably test, right, for the most part, especially at the high school level. But I think, like, you know, there's certain sports where, you know, is it needed as much? And, you know, I know for my college guys, for the soccer side, we definitely changed up our preseason testing. And, you know, I didn't put as much of an emphasis on, like, raw, like, lower body strength this year. And it was more on just like, hey, how fast and powerful we are, and are we in good shape? Because the best soccer teams are made up of like the guys who are the most skilled and stay on the field the longest. And then obviously are fast and powerful. Some of my weaker guys are my best players, and they'll never come off the field. So it's, yes, we want to make those guys better and stronger and more stable and robust, but let's be real, in that type of sport, it's, can I keep you guys on the field, and can you display power and do it repeatedly? You don't need to be the guy ripping 100-pound rear elevate split squats, although that, you know, could help you. But I've just come to that realization just working with soccer and some other sports. It's more about like the expression of the strength you have rather than the strength itself.
Yeah, for sure. By the way, I just want to kind of throw this out there, and this is why I love this being super live and unscripted. Let's see. Hold on. Okay, so this guy's a sports anchor in Buffalo, so nothing against him. He just put a video up from a Bills tight end in practice, and I'm not even joking. He's doing circles around cones about five in a row and just catching a lightly thrown pass, and that's that drill in practice.
You just retweeted it, and I'm watching it.
He's spinning around in circles.
Literally spinning around in circles, like.
And I really like. I'm learning that like I leave myself less susceptible to backlash by not being so strong in what I say. So I tried to word that in a really, really like nice way.
No, I mean he's doing circles. I don't know how to else to. You hit the nail on the head. There's a bunch of cones right in a straight line, and he's doing some circles, but.
Yeah, the way you're describing it's making me. He stirs a bunch of cones and he's doing some circles, and
I don't know, man. It's interesting, and again, like it's not a terrible drill, but it's almost like it's kind of just like brainwashed because we're not there, we're not in their context, so like we don't know their full.
Which is why I tried to word it the way that I did, saying like it seemed. But like that's another thing. Like I would honestly rather see him like lightly go through a ladder and catch a ball. Like, the spinning around just seems so ridiculous to me.
Well, and again, like, for us as private sector guys, like, I don't care about that video, but I know that video is going to inspire some other crazy amount of stuff. And, you know, I remember, like, there's that video of that, like, kid who's super athletic. Like, he's absolutely ripped. Like, he's, like, 5 years old or something.
Yeah.
And he's so fast. You know what I'm talking about? And there's a bunch of videos of him like going through like these speed ladders and then doing like catching a football, then running over like some hurdles and doing like fast feet drills. And he's like 5 years old, and there's like five guys in the background all recording him. And it's like, listen, like he's a freak now, but that's just not really, you know, that's not going to like make him continue to be a freak down the line. It's just that stuff. Like, again, like he's got that genetic potential, but like, the dud kid that can't do that stuff, like that's not going to help them. They just need lower level stuff. And let's be real, most amount of kids are at that level. And even the ones that aren't, and the ones that are already pretty high level, like that's just doesn't improve anything in my eyes. I just think it's kind of garbage, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. All right. So not too long of a tangent there. Thankfully, that came on my feed, and I we're on Twitter right now, and I couldn't ignore it. All right. I think we're on question seven now. So this will be my fourth. What do you got for me?
Yeah. I just ran past it, so I'm going to mess up some of the wording. It was from a little bit ago. But you talked about, like, I think this is important. It's not a rant. So I think we're, you know, us being, you know, hot blooded Italians, we definitely been ranting a little bit. So we'll talk about some positive stuff here. But, you talked about like yourself having a bad day. I don't know if you remember this one.
And yes, like, I do. Yeah.
And they're like, how it's okay. And especially in the field, like you just weren't feeling it. You weren't feeling motivated. You know, maybe like you weren't, you know, you were kind of questioning yourself, like, and anyone that's like in the private sector, and especially like entrepreneur type of people, like your ability, like to get people to come train with you is your livelihood. And it's a scary thing. And
yeah, it is. It's very, yes.
It's a lot of pressure, right? So, but you talked about how it's okay and like how you're going to get through it and kind of so forth. So I know like myself, I always like, there's times I have doubt, and there's definitely times where I'm like, dude, like people probably don't care to see this. I'm posting too much. Like my friends probably judging me, family, you know, my family's obviously very supportive, but, you know, and then there's other times like where I question myself is getting into this field and if I'm doing the right thing. So I don't know if you want to kind of touch on that.
Yeah, for sure. I think the main message that I was trying to get across with that is first and foremost, I think people have this idea that, and I hate even to like think of myself in this light because I feel like I just really try to stay away from coming across as conceited or anything. But guys like us in the field that have a good following on social media and people look to us for things in the field, and we're lucky to be in that position at young ages. I feel like people, like, if they do, I want to make sure that they don't look at us in the sense that, like, we don't have ever bad days. Like, we're always, you know, going at 100 miles an hour and always ready to go and boom, boom, boom. And I feel like in the world where so many athletes have so much pressure on them, and a lot of athletes follow me and a lot of coaches in the field follow me and who go through those same stresses, I felt like it was really important for them to understand that I have bad days. And not only do I have bad days, but like, it's okay for, you know, it's okay for me to have them and it's okay for them to have them. And the most important thing is to not let them compound and to understand that odds are when something's going bad, that it means that good is coming. And sometimes when there's good coming, that you want to stay even keel because there could be some bad on the horizon. So kind of just trying to, stay level and not let that dictate, you know, anything other than like that initial feeling you have.
Yeah. I think like, and we say this a lot to our interns, especially like on day one, that listen, you're not going to be 100% at all times. And I think it's bull crap advice when coaches say you have to train at 100%. Like that's just not, or 110%. That's even the funnier one. It's just not mathematically correct. But like, we're not going to have 100% days. Like, how do you, when you identify those days, what are some things you do maybe to, like, this can help other coaches like cope?
Yeah, like, for
it's
sure.
Just chilling, listening to a podcast, music, or like, how do you, in the heat of it, especially working with hundreds of athletes every week, how do you zone in and just like try to cool off for a second? Especially on the fly, like, sometimes something's just said on the fly and you just get like kind of caught off guard, or you're just not having those days. So I don't know if you had any strategies that you use and
absolutely
maybe you can help other coaches.
Yeah. So I'd say the first thing, and I'm going to give two different pieces of advice here. One, in terms of handling it in the heat of the moment, when you're actually, you know, working and have the guys, you know, the athletes, guys and girls around, and you have to kind of be, you know, strong for them. And the second being when you have time to yourself. So, the first one being, you know, when you're in the, you know, heat of battle, so to speak, and you kind of have to maintain your composure, deal with like maybe what's bothering you, or that sometimes like it's just the nature of the beast. You have a bad day because you have a bad day. And I think that being able to really zero in on like the specifics of like what's going on in the training helps me a lot. Like to kind of double down and buckle down a little bit on even like some of the more, the finer points of exactly what I'm doing with an athlete at the given time can really help me kind of drift past what's bothering me and stay in that moment. Because above all else, like that athlete has no idea what's bothering me, no idea that I'm having a bad day or anything like that. And they're there because I'm supposed to be getting them better. And as coaches, we're supposed to get them better and we owe them that. So I think the biggest importance, and then the biggest thing I could drive home for that is just to try to stay in the moment and, you know, double down on what you're zoned in on in the training itself. And it can kind of help keep you, you know, in the present moment. And then I would say in terms of like outside of that moment is, you know, go home, like put your phone away or put it over to the side. Or I really have a lot of success with just like watching shows that I enjoy for an hour or two, or, you know, having a little time to decompress when I get home and, you know, watching some YouTube videos I enjoy, or even like, honestly, for me, sometimes like going on Twitter and tweeting things I have thoughts about is relaxing to me. So I think those would be my two biggest pieces of advice is, you know, in the moment, try to zone in on what you're doing. It'll help a little bit and, kind of buckle in on something important that, you know, an intricacy or a fine point of what you're doing. And, you know, in times where you're to yourself, maybe just try to, you know, enjoy something that relaxes you, whether it's a funny show, some music, or just something totally random. It could be anything. Like just have that to kind of like get you back to neutral.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And, you know, I forgot like how the quote went or whatever, but it's like meditation, right? Like people will wake up in the morning and get mindful and meditate and be all peaceful. But then when they're in line in the grocery store and it's like a long line, they start getting stressed because they don't practice that when it actually matters most, right? So I think that's like important advice for like young coaches is like when things are on the fly, like you're working with athletes and you're not having the great day or something stupid said to you, like how do you in the zone,
you know, quit.
And, you know, I remember like my first year as a coach, like I think I just said something stupid to another coach and it just like, again, like I was hot-headed and I just didn't know how to control the situation. And I mean, me and him are boys now, so it doesn't matter, but, it was just one of those things too. So, you know, I think it's important to like learn how to control yourself in the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of think that just kind of sums it up perfectly. And I'm kind of sitting on one right now that I really want to get out. So I think I'm going to jump right to it, but, okay. So this was from September 26th and it had a graph basically showing the approximate percentage of, motor units, involved in different activities. And you quoted Buddy Morris, the great Buddy Morris, saying the difference between a good athlete and a great athlete is the ability to recruit motor units. And, you know, this is why short sprints and med balls should be used weekly. So take a look, take us through that. You know, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. So again, like I was actually going through the Conjugate U book and Nate Harvey, who's my boy, wrote that book. But, you know, I've been kind of switching a little bit more gears, like doing a lot of, you know, conjugate stuff lately and, you know, loving it within the last couple of months. And I think it's like, honestly, like the best model for in season. I just think it's like the most flexible, whether you get a kid for 1 day or 2 days or 3 days, it's just, it tends to like work out the easiest. Cause you're trying to improve or maintain all the attributes at once. So I've had success with it in the last, you know, half year using it. And obviously a couple of years before that, but, yeah. So, I mean, basically like for us, like there's a couple different movements. So there's the clean and jerk that are up there high. There's a snatch. There's a, you know, I think deadlift and squat should be up higher. If you actually, I don't know how this study was done, but they're around like 60%. I think those should be completely higher. But I think, you know, again, when you look at it, like sprinting is the most athletic thing you can do. And I also think it's one of the safest things you can do if the volume is pretty low and you're getting enough rest time. And, you know, again, we're talking about like 10 to 20 yard sprints. And again, like following a lot of your stuff, but like weekly sprints should be in every single kid's program.
Yeah, for sure.
Whether it's, I mean, 4 10 yard sprints can do wonders for, you know, a kid, especially in season. Because I mean, they're sprinting on the field during practice and during games, but unless you're putting it in a drill where they're doing a full out 10 to 20 yard full out sprint where they're not changing direction, they're probably not getting that in any drill, right? And in most cases, they're probably doing it within a conditioning setting, so they're not, again, getting that full 100, you know, close to 100% intensity. So that's really where I was going with the tweet. And then when you look at like med ball throws and like obviously like jumping and plyometrics, like med balls are so underutilized and they're biggest bang for your buck, like as far as, you know, what you can do. Like you don't need that much equipment. So, you know, if you're a sport coach who doesn't have a great high school weight room, you could still get powerful with just a med ball. And those are relatively pretty cheap.
For sure.
Whether it's rotational slams, stepping med ball throw, a stepping med ball sprint throw, you know, tomahawk slam, whatever you want to do. They're just tools that we've been using weekly. And the cool thing is like the stress on the body is enough for adaptation to happen positive. But as far as negative stress, I don't see how 4 10 yard sprints and a couple med ball drills, like it's not going to make you sore. It's not going to make you tired. It's not going to really fry your nervous system. So I think they just need to be used every single week, whether in season, off season, whatever. Like they can be used the day before a game. Like kids are not going to, you know, get sore or tired from those type of drills. So that's kind of like the reason why I posted it. I think it's just important to like understand, like, and I know you posted something about hockey guys. Like your hockey guys are sprinting once a week in season.
Yeah.
Hockey out of any sport, like that's the sport that needs to be sprinting. in season because they're not opening up their hips truly on the ice. And if they're not sprinting with you in the weight room, they're going from, you know, talk about junior hockey, that's August to, if you guys have a good team, you could be playing August to March. And if you're not doing a sprint, that's half a year, over half a year, not doing the most athletic thing you can do.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's a great point too, to bring up on that, is that, like you said, people think that, oh, like sprints, we got to do 47 of them. No, like you can do like 2, 3, 4 of them and get the effect and get the hell out of there. Like it's not going to kill you. And people think that they can't do them because of that. So, you know, really important to kind of dispel that, that, you know, misconception.
Yeah. I think like, I've always like tried to like put that into, you know, easier terms for coaches, but like sometimes they'll be like, oh, like, you know, that could just make them tired. And then, yeah, look at their warm up and it's like still doing 2 jogs around a 100-yard turf field. That's, you know what I mean? Like that's more tiring than, you know, 3 10-yard sprints. And then, you know, when you look at, you know, I obviously like trying to get more buy-in through soccer in the community, in the field, because I think soccer needs to improve with that. But, you know, we've been having great success like training with our teams before games, like the day before. And I know a lot of pushback is, oh, that's going to get people tired. And it's just like your pregame warm-up, especially being an ex-college soccer guy myself, if you're going serious, like our pregame warm-up was 30 to 40 minutes and it was tiring. Like we would go through a really good dynamic warm-up and then we play some possession type skill, you know, drill. And then we get into like long ball and then we would finish with like a finishing drill every single warm-up for 30, 40 minutes. Like that was pretty tiring. Like, not to the point we couldn't play a game, but we're warming up, right? We're trying to move. We're trying to break a sweat. And to say that 2 10-yard sprints the day before, and then obviously some low volume training is more tiring than that is just kind of backwards thinking, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, but yeah, no, that's a good one. Right now I'm kind of looking through some of your tweets right now.
So we got one more each.
One more each?
Yes.
I want to pick a really good one for you. I'm going deep here.
Oh, God. I sometimes shudder to think of what I might have said in the past.
This one got – I'm trying to find a really big one, but this one kind of already talked about some of the stuff. Give me 1 second. Sorry.
No, you're good, man. I just the whole
– All right. Yeah, put it on. Bye. This one's kind of funny. So if a physical therapist or strength coach tries to sell you on recovery as only a Theragun, Normatec boops, or stim machine, you're not going to the right place. So that's funny because we have one of the best physical therapists, I think, in the area, and he uses Theragun and he uses Normatec, but he will say that that's not what it's about. And it's crazy how many people pick strength coaches or therapists because of that stuff, and they do have their place, but that's probably
for sure
1 or 2 minutes of his program, of his treatment session, right? So I don't know, like, if you like, what like inspired you to tweet that? Like, you must have seen something like,
yeah,
crazy.
So correct, you have it in front of you still?
Yeah, I
okay.
Have it in front.
So how did I word that? Did I say if that's the main focus I said, or what? How did I say that?
Yeah, you were kind of like, if they try to sell you on this, like.
Oh, like that, that's like the, that's how they're telling you, like, oh, they're going to get you better, basically.
Yeah.
So, okay. So what inspired me, maybe not particularly like in that instance when I tweeted it. But I think what inspires me mostly in my train of thought in that sense is the, physical therapy company, and physical therapist that I've known for years and that I have the pleasure of being affiliated with, that I send my athletes to and all the kind of stuff that I've learned a lot from. And they're known as like, the kings of getting people better with manual work and like exercise based approach to like movement. Right. So I think in I remember what inspired this. I got the thought in my head of like, when athletes come in the facility and like, they're not on, you know, my time or on time with me, or even kids like that I don't work with in a private setting that I might just have in like the big bulk of the teams that I work with, come in before a game and like, 15 of them just herd right over to the foam rollers and just like lie on the ground and flop on top of them for 10 minutes. And I'm thinking of the physical therapy sense of like a lot of these people that try to like sell like, oh, recovery package, like, you know, strap the Normatec on, or, we have the new fancy Theragun, like, There's a trainer that I know of around my area that, like, in addition to the other crazy things that they do, one of them is like, oh, like, here's, you know, go to a trainer that does the best means of recovery. And it's a picture of all the Normatex and machines and Theraguns. I'm just like, oh, that's just so not it. Like,
yeah, it's, go ahead. It's just missing the whole point completely. Like
use them. They're great tools, but like,
yeah, it's the same thing as like supplements, right? Like, What the fuck is a supplement? It's a supplement to an already sound diet, right?
Yeah.
So it's like,
What supplement means. It complements something.
Exactly. It's taking a protein shake, but you're eating Pop Tarts for breakfast. Yeah. It doesn't mean anything. So like, again, like, I love our physical therapist because he would tell kids that to their face. Like, if you're not getting treatment with me, I'm not putting you in a Normatec.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm not doing a Theragun session with you. That's part of it, but that's not, and that's such a little part, right? So, you know, that's the thing, like, people have to understand, like, it just looks cool, it's selly, but like, the best thing, like, Alan Bishop tweets it all the time, but like, sleep, water, nutrition, like, that's your probably best recovery, especially for people that just constantly have like soft tissue problems or like constantly like, you know, I'm feeling like heavy, I'm feeling tight. It's like, you probably can solve that by just drinking a little bit more water and getting better sleep.
My lower back hurts. Like, can we hit it with some stim? And I'm like, or we could just go get your core and your glutes stronger, because we know that's the reason why your lower back is in a position that it's in, and maybe that'll fix the problem.
Yeah. Let me ask you that. Are your physical therapist guys, are they like kind of like private based, I guess I would yes. say? Like, not, yeah. So that's the model. And again, we're not physical therapists. Like, we shouldn't be comparing that. But like, I love that model of private. And we work with our physical therapist, Man of Performance Therapies, the man. You know, he worked in the insurance.
They're called Performance as well, the guys I work with.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Performance Physical Therapy. Yeah.
Yeah, our guy's Man of Performance Therapy. But yeah, he worked in the private model and, you know, insurance space. And, you know, you're seeing 20 plus people a day, and it's the typical, all right, you're gonna go stim for 10 minutes and then do your stretches, and I gotta go work with this person. And he just, you know, he's so high quality where like that just wasn't gonna work right for the long term.
Yeah, their model is like, you get on the table when you first get there, they check, like, you know, hey, you're seeing me for a knee, let me see how it moves in a certain couple different positions, or let's just say even a basic one, your lower back. So maybe some of what they do on the table, the manual, is maybe working out some of the spasms you had as a result of the positions you were in. And then the remainder of the session is like you going back and like doing core work and whatever you need to do to get like those dysfunctions taken care of.
Oh, I mean, I've always suffered from lower back pain, and, you know, he's my therapist that I'll go to, and like, we'll practice deadlifting. And
yeah. We'll do that too.
It's just awesome, that one-on-one care. Hey, I know I'm cheating the system, but I did find a really a good one.
Go ahead. Hit me with it.
But yeah, that we can do what we want, right?
Yeah, for sure.
No, it's kind of similar to a little bit of the gimmicky stuff of the sport specific, but I think this is really important too. But you quoted it, fast moving feet and speed is the misconception, illusion that speed is from the feet moving quickly, when in fact they were being guided through rapid rate of force development and low ground contact times via lengthening, shortening of and firing of the ankles, knees, and hips. So obviously, like, we know quick feet, like, slow feet don't eat, like, those type of things, like, no, it's about, like, displacement, right? It's about force. So that kind of goes into, again, like, some of the gimmicky, some of the stuff we see out there, but I don't know if you kind of want to touch on that a little bit and your thoughts on that.
So, funny enough, I actually, before we got on the call to do this, my trainer that I brought on a little over a year ago, Julian, he just started a podcast based on like basketball and strength training. And I had the pleasure of being his first guest, and we just recorded and we talked a little bit about this. And I think the biggest thing that I want to kind of mention, you know, on this topic is that, you know, misconception that, you know, speed is the idea of the feet being quicker. Like, I hear the sport coaches tell me all the time, like, oh, like, I'm glad this, you know, guy or girl's going to you, like, they have to get their feet quicker. And I'm just like, oh, like, fine, yeah, I'll get them faster. Like, I'm not going to get into it. Just give them to me. I'll make them faster. And if you think it's because their feet are faster, then whatever the hell, you know, get you to, you know, put your head on the pillow at night and go to sleep. But basically the idea that, like, the feet aren't guiding us and the quicker moving feet aren't what make us faster. And in reality, the foot is moved and kind of controlled by the hips, by the knees, by the ankles, that, you know, in and out of extension and flexion of the leg, and the, you know, more we can, you know, rapidly we can displace force, the faster that process happens, which makes it look like the feet are moving faster. The feet are not the the driver, they are the result of, right? So I think that's my biggest takeaway from that tweet, or what I was trying to get out was that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, wheels and rims don't make the car go. It's the engine, right? It's the same concept. But how funny is it sometimes just when you get those parents or coaches that, you know, you're always stuck in those moments where they're like, yeah, like they just need, you know, that core. And you just have to bite your tongue sometimes because it's just funny to be in those situations sometimes. Yeah. Like, you have the opportunity to educate, but sometimes it's like, all right, I don't want to be the know-it-all. Like, yeah, just smile and keep it moving sometimes.
I've heard this 15,000 times. Like, I can't.
I remember one of my tweets went viral, but it was like, core is the most overused word. And like, again, like I'll always do anti-extension, anti-lateral flexion, anti-rotation work in any one of my programs. But like, I can do one core exercise a day and I'm fine with that.
Like,
you know, it's, you don't need to bury a kid with core work, and we know that, but it's just funny when those things come up. But I think you're on the last one here, right?
Yeah, for sure. So this is your pinned tweet.
Listeners, 11 here. Here we go.
Yeah. So yeah, we cheated and we did 11 instead of 10. We're badasses. So this is your pinned tweet. No big deal. 1.6 thousand likes and 72,000 views. No big deal. So it says, if you're ... jumping, landing, decelerating, eccentrically loading, lifting, training on one leg, etc., then you don't need to spend $120 on an ACL prevention clinic. ACL prevention should just be a part of your program, not a separate program. So I guess kind of piggybacking off the same idea of like what I was talking about with the Theragun and the recovery, like people trying to sell those as like a separate program. Like, no, the recovery a lot is, you know, what you're eating, what you're doing in training. It's like a whole comprehensive thing. Similar to your point, it's, you know, ACL prevention is good training.
Absolutely. And again, like I regret in that tweet, it should be ACL reduction, because let's be real, we're not preventing all ACL tears. I think we know that, but it should have been reduction. And to be completely honest, like what got me fired about that was I got a freaking flyer in the mail for, you know, I'm not going to say what company or whatever, just sending out mass emails and flyers for ACL prevention for athletes and what you should know about it. And, you know, $100, $120 clinic and like, you know, screening and all that stuff. And it's like, that's literally 10 minutes of our warm up is part of that. You know what I mean? And not just 10 minutes. Like, we're doing obviously strength work. We're doing, you know, stuff like that. But it's like, I can give you that $120 and, you know, the whatever time frame that it takes for us to warm up. Like, by the time we're doing some mobility, some dynamics, and then getting some ladders or, you know, hurdle drills and landing drills and landing on box jumps properly, that's just like your part of it, right? And then obviously eccentrically loading and, you know, lifting and just getting stronger. Like, hey, are your glutes strong? Like, when you get hit in a game, are you gonna, you know, withstand contact? Like, that's just part of it. So I think it goes back to the whole thing, and we know all the time, like, there's a time and place for like speed and agility clinics. Like, I think they're a good way to, like, you know, get it known and maybe your business out there, but a speed and agility only workout. And we get this all the time from parents, like, hey, my son just needs a conditioning workout, or he just needs a sprint workout. And it's like, no, there's a comprehensive approach to being a full athlete. And I think the better we educate on like how it's that holistic approach of everything's connected and everything matters, we can get people to buy into the fact that we're building better, full-rounded athletes. Right. So it just goes back to that point that we're just trying to build a little bit of everything. But I still think it's just ridiculous that there's people just trying to sell like one type of thing. Like, you know what I mean? It's not like a research or anything. It's like a $100 clinic. And when you look at like $120, like, that can get you a month membership at some gyms. Like, that's a decent amount of money for like a 1 day ACL clinic, right?
Yeah. Especially when it's a waste, because it's nothing's going to be accomplished in that 1 day.
No. And
Yeah, like that, I mean, that $120 is like the loss should be magnified times like 10, because not only are you spending $120, but you're wasting $120 because it could have been spent somewhere else.
Yeah. Again, like $120, like, okay, are you going to sign up for that program? Like, what's that program? Like, you're just going to do four sessions of learning how to land over a hurdle, like, and that's it. And then doing some clamshells, and it's, you know, like that's not going to prevent, you know, it's the same thing. Like, if you're just landing, and again, like I should have made a bigger emphasis, like on lifting, like I think lifting is some, you know, maybe more important. Than
I don't know, man. You said,
piece,
you said eccentrically loading, lifting. You got a lot. I mean,
yeah.
I give you credit.
Yeah, that's
true. You
got
most of
it. Sometimes. The video, I think, is what made it get so many likes and retweets. Just a bunch of, you know, like 50 girls in the background just landing over hurdles and things like that. You know, that stuff's obviously important, but you know, I want people to know, like, we're lifting too. Like, that's our meat and potatoes. Like, you can do all the hurdle drills all you want, but if you're not actually like loading the body with weight and getting stronger, and, you know, then you're just it's kind of eyewash, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. I couldn't agree more. All right. I mean, listen, that was really fun, and I think it's going to be a very popular episode. And I'm just really happy with how it went. And as I always like to do with all my guests, kind of just floating this out there to you, the floor is yours. Like, anything you kind of wanted to leave the listener with is like a last thought.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you having me on. I think like the main thing is for people to know, like, especially us as like young coaches, like, you know, we're not ranting. Like, this is important stuff to like bring up. And, you know, I think, you know, you have a big follower base and a lot of them are young coaches. Like, I think the biggest thing is like continuing to have more coaches put content out there.
Yeah.
Sure. We're never all going to be right. And, you know, I'm going to look back at a couple of years and I might regret some of the tweets I made and posts I made and just thought I was an idiot. Just like I look at some of my programs and I'm just like, what the frick was I thinking?
That's part of it, man.
But I think we can. Yeah, absolutely. I think, and it needs to be. But I think like we just need more coaches like you, like myself. I'll put myself in that category.
Yeah,
like,
for sure, man.
Putting
absolutely
content out. It's awesome. Like, I'm sure you get all the time, but like when other coaches who I'll probably never meet in person, you know, maybe message us saying like, hey, we helped them just this little bit. And then like that coach is now using it with their athletes. So in essence, like we might be helping athletes like across the world, across the country that we will never meet. We'll never even know. And it just pushes our field. So I think we just need to continue to like stick together for the coaches that obviously like we don't all have to agree with every single concept, but you know, as long as we're respectfully putting information out there, and then when we don't disagree, like again, still being respectful of each other and having those disagreements and being civil with them, like that's only going to make us all better. So I guess that's what I'll leave off with. And then, again, to you, just thanks for continuing to push a great podcast. You have amazing guests on. You know, I'm lucky to just be a part of it.
Yeah, for sure, man. I think, you know, Hav is really excited to have you on, because I kind of was pumped for the idea of an episode where it was like we were just kind of shooting the shit and talking about some important stuff. And I love the, you know, flexibility and the authenticity provided by this type of format for the show. And, you know, like you said, just to reiterate, you know, being young coaches and kind of taking the reign on, you know, giving people the confidence to kind of put what they want, you know, and what they're doing on the internet and learning, you know, more by doing it. I think it's huge. And just like you said, to echo that like sentiment, you know, if you don't look back at yourself from a couple of years ago and kind of laugh, you're not growing. And I think it's something that you have to be okay with, is realizing that you didn't know, you know, a lot of stuff back then. And while you know a little more now, you still have like way more to go. So, very well said on that end. And, you know, thanks again for coming on. I think this was, you know, an awesome episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Muscles and Management Podcast, brought to you by Challenger Strength. I'm your host, Jared DiFilippo, signing off on the show that's changing the way we view training, sports performance, and business.